talking about the right to trial by jury. For example, I quoted the Illinois Constitution, and that one is extremely explicit. It says, the right of trial by jury as heretofore enjoyed shall remain inviolate. Well, you can't get much clearer than that. So that document was written at the time of statehood. So what they're saying is the right of trial by jury as it existed one day before statehood shall remain as it was and cannot be changed. Now, Minnesota is not quite as explicit in the way it words that. Minnesota simply says, quote, the right of trial by jury shall remain inviolate. Now, it does not use the words as heretofore, like many states do, but that the courts have construed that shall remain language as meaning is it shall remain as it is today. So there's kind of a cutoff time on jurisprudence as of the date of the Constitution. And as of that date, it will remain in effect as it was as of that date. And I cite a couple of cases here holding that. Now, the Constitution has been amended as to what the right to trial by jury means. For example, there are amendments of the Constitution allowing a 5-6 verdict. There's an amendment allowing a 6-person jury in civil cases and misdemeanor cases. So the reason those are amendments is because the only way to change the trial by jury is to amend the Constitution, because it says that in the absence of an amendment, it remains as it was as of 1858. So the territorial cases talking about trial by jury kind of take on a special significance. So if you cite one of those and say, Judge, you have to follow this 1850 case, in many cases, you know, that's going to be a frivolous argument. But in the case involving the right to trial by jury, that jurisprudence is kind of locked in by the Constitution. So that's a pretty solid argument. And I have a couple of cites for that. Now, the other thing to keep in mind, too, is that, remember, what they're locking in that guaranteed a jury trial is the law as it existed in the territory of 1858. Well, remember, that law, adopted by reference the law of Wisconsin. So if there's not an explicit provision, you can look at Wisconsin territory legislation and Wisconsin territorial cases to get further information. And you can track that back in time. But I noticed on this page, if you want to correct your notes, I listed the litany of states, Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, Northwest Territory. I left out Michigan. So anyway, if you're looking at the right to trial by jury, you can look at the laws of the Wisconsin Territory to the extent that it's not changed, to the law of the Michigan Territory to the extent not changed, and then back to Illinois, back to Indiana, back to the Northwest Territory. So that's where that kind of chain of title gets significant. Now, are you really going to find the Michigan Territory case that's exactly on point? Well, maybe not, because no facts change. But something to keep in the back of your mind about that. So again, those are kind of memorialized into the Constitution. Special significance for that reason. Now, in the first volume of Minnesota Reports, the topic in the territorial pieces, the topic of jurors is addressed in a few places. For example, and this is pretty well settled, we're probably not saying it anymore, that a juror affidavit is not, a juror cannot be impeached by his own affidavit. You can't use juror affidavits to impeach the verdict. That's a pretty settled principle. I don't think there's too much argument about that. But, you know, if somebody wants to depart from that rule a little bit, say, well, you can bring in the affidavit in this case, well, no, there's a pretty strong argument that that's a constitutional provision now, because the right to jury as it existed in territorial, and in the territorial days, that affidavit was not competent to impeach the verdict. One of those cases that's also interesting, I think, is and also significant. Another case back in Luxembourg is this Steele v. Maloney, 1857. That's kind of interesting because they were holding trial, I think, in St. Paul, and they ran out of jurors. The panels had been used up in some other cases, so they didn't have enough jurors. So the statute apparently called for this provision, and the judge just sent the sheriff out to find some more jurors. And it's not stated in the case, but you know, when you think about it, if you're the sheriff and you need to find some jurors, where are you going to go? Well, chances are you went to the tavern to find some jurors, because you know that's where the able-bodied citizens were available, are going to hang out. So the sheriff goes to somewhere, probably to his tavern, and rounds up some jurors and brings them in, and they're sworn in, and they're the panel. Well, the one party objected to that and said, well, no, they, you know, that's highly irregular. Well, but no, that was deemed to be okay, because, and the court said, especially. It often happens, and especially in a new country, inhabited by a mixed and constantly changing population, that the original panel falls short of the required number. To remedy this deficiency, there's the provision in the statute to still round up people off the street, and that's appropriate. That case also has the unremarkable proposition that if you're going to object to a juror, you have to do it before you see it. In that case, apparently one of the jurors had not lived in the county or in the territory for a required period of time, but no objection was made, and so they said that objection is waived. So again, I don't think that's too remarkable. But remember that these cases, as much as they talk about the right to trial by jury, are kind of locked in by the Constitution. There are. You know, the jury trial doesn't, the right, you know, the bare right to a trial by jury probably doesn't come up too often. You probably don't have some judge Monday morning who's trying to say, no, you're not entitled to a jury trial. But if he is, it's in the Constitution. But where that might come in handy, it seems to me, is there are so many things that, you know, just talking about the bare right to trial by jury, that impacts so many other things. So, for example, you know, in a summary judgment case, you know, where the case is being taken from the hands of the jury, I mean, there's really an issue there of right to trial by jury. Now, you know, I mean, summary judgment existed in the territory, so I mean, it's not saying that there can never be summary judgment if the party's not entitled to it. But, you know, keep in mind that is the constitutional issue of trial by jury, and it's that special constitutional issue where the earlier cases from the 1840s or from the 1850s are kind of locked into place. So that's one where I think there might be some cases where you can kind of, you know, get this old case that will kind of trump everything else. And because there's so many, you know, evidentiary things, is, you know, some rule of evidence says so-and-so. Well, what that rule of evidence really says is the jury is entitled to hear this evidence or the jury is not entitled to hear this evidence. So it kind of impacts the right to trial by jury. And it's one of those cases then where these earlier cases take on special meaning. So that's some of the litigation that plays out here on the frontier. I'll just talk a little bit about some of the courts. The court system in the territory consisted of three justices of the Supreme Court, Chief Justice and two judges who rolled the circuit out to their respective districts and heard cases. Goodrich was the first judge. He sounded like kind of a colorful character. Again, you know, when you look at these decisions and read some of the biographies, it seems like they were probably pretty good judges, despite some of the little stories and you know, people